Mini-episode 1882 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late-night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to mini-episode 1882 of the FDH Lounge. We have with you here today FDH Lounge dignitaries Rick Morris and Steve Callis, our great friend from the Callis Remarks podcast with Joe Stazak and many other media entities over the years. And it's great to have Steve on to talk baseball. We have him on for any number of sports over a period of time, but baseball has always been the core with him. And of course, traditionally, it's always been him and Ken Detweiler together, our late great friend who passed away at the beginning of the baseball season. So it kind of hit me as I was preparing for this one here that normally I would be lining up to do it with both of these guys. But yet another one that we do in Ken's memory here with Steve Callis, taking a look back at the 2025 MLB season and the World Series. It was a World Series for the ages. It was, as a guy that said the Dodgers were going to win, I could have said had it all the way, but
Never in doubt.
Yeah, no, that was the exact opposite of what I expected. I'm the first to admit it. And again, Steve, it was the capper to a very interesting season. I would say a World Series even more interesting than the season was, because the World Series was an all-timer.
No question about that. Great to be with you. Wish Ken could be here because I miss him. I know how you guys feel, you know. And a great baseball guy, of course. But I wanted to focus on, at least during the regular season, I know we'll get to the World Series, but just a couple minutes on the regular season. I thought this was, to a big degree, the year of the home run. And as these things were happening, and a lot of them happened with the Yankees, but, you know, the Yankees couldn't beat the Blue Jays. But in the regular season, a lot of these things were happening, and I just shook my head. If it was the beginning of the steroids era, we'd all be pointing fingers and say, oh, that guy's got a big head, or, you know, Barry Bonds looks like the Hulk, or whatever. But I just wanted to give you a few things, because and maybe you have an explanation. You might tell me it's launch angle. You might tell me just the hitters are getting better. I don't know. But you had three guys hit four home runs in a game. Suarez in April, the rookie Nick Kurtz, a rookie, the first rookie ever to hit four home runs in the game, July 25th. And then Kyle Schwarber on August 28th. This is the first time that there's ever been four home runs in the game three times in the season. Okay, so that's one thing. Maybe it's a one-off. Maybe three guys had incredible days. But then you look at the Yankees. The Yankees hit nine home runs in the game twice. Only two other teams. The Blue Jays actually hold the record with 10 from 1987. And the Cincinnati Reds in, I wrote it down, 1999, they hit nine home runs in the game. Okay. But the Yankees did it twice in one game. So when you look at the history of baseball, Rick, going back to 1893 or 1900, 1920, the live ball, or wherever you want to start, there have only been two until this season. And then the Yankees did it twice in one season. Now, I know the Yankees are a good home run hitting team, et cetera, et cetera. But these are things that just don't happen. The other thing the Yankees did, which has never happened, at the beginning of a Major League Baseball game, they had back-to-back-to-back home runs, first three batters. Now, you and I could talk about the 20s and 30s and 50s and 60s into the 70s until like a Ricky Henderson. Your leadoff guy was like a 250 hitter who had a good eye and could get on base and bunt and get walks and, you know.
Right.
But it was like unheard of for leadoff guys to hit home runs. It rarely happened. And I mean, I'm going right back. So I look at all these things. And finally, and I think he deserves the MVP, by the way, over Aaron Judge, and I'm a Yankee fan. Cal Raleigh hit 60 home runs as the switch hitting catcher.
Yeah.
When you think of the catchers, who comes to your mind? I don't know, Yogi Berra. No switch hitter comes to my mind. Yogi Berra or Roy Campanella. I think Salvador Perez had the record just for home runs by a catcher. It was like 47. No catcher had ever hit 50. This guy hit 60 and five in the playoffs.
Right.
And I'll just take one from my pet peeve, which you're well familiar with. And then he hits five in the playoffs, and now everyone's going, oh, he hit more home runs that year than Roger Maris. He hit more home when Roger Maris hit 61. Oh, he hit more than Aaron Judge when Aaron Judge hit 62. Oh, he hit more than Babe Ruth. But all those guys could only play what in the World Series, you know, in the postseason? They could only play one series. Mm-hmm. I'm not knocking Cal Raleigh at home. Again, I think he's the MVP. They made the playoffs.
Right.
And he performed well in the playoffs. But yeah. There's always that. I don't know if I want to. I'll go very briefly, but minorly. This so bothers me that I wrote all these things down. But okay. I'll just do it from memory now.
Okay.
The other thing that bothers me about home runs in the postseason, as you know, Mickey Mantle, 18 home runs in the postseason. No, in the World Series.
Mm-hmm.
Babe Ruth, 15 home runs in the postseason. No, in the World Series. In fact, Max Muncy, they said during this World Series, oh, you know, Max is tied with Babe Ruth for the most home runs in the postseason. And then, like, the next inning or something, Muncy hits a home run and goes, oh, he's ahead of Babe Ruth. He's got 16. The Babe only had 15. And I'm looking at it. You know how many home runs Max Muncy has hit in the World Series?
How many?
One.
Wow.
One. So when you go down the list, the all-time leader of Manny Ramirez, who doesn't like Manny Ramirez, is a big power hitter. He's got the most home runs in the postseason ever at 29. You know what I mean? He's got in the World Series? Four.
Okay.
I don't know. It just drives me crazy. And when you look at the list of the top 10 World Series home run leaders of all time, the only guy who gets there is Mickey Mantle. He's like tied for 10th.
Yeah.
Well, I'll stop. I know we want to move on, but I'll stop. But they should always have two charts for me. Postseason,
sure.
World Series.
I have reactions to a couple of different points there. I'll start with what you said there and work my way backwards. So this is something that might be a slap in the face to purists like me and you, but I think it's the lesser of two evils. This is what we need to do. We need to have somebody, maybe even an all-star panel of baseball luminaries, play Strat-O-Matic games here. If the Yankees had been in the if there'd been an ALCS, if there'd been an ALDS, we need to simulate how many home runs Babe Ruth would have had and put it in the record books. So that's what we need to do. You want to be on an even keel? Well, it says here Babe Ruth had 45 home runs in the postseason. That's how you solve that one, Steve. Problem solved.
I agree 100% because as I said with Joe Stasek a couple of weeks ago, you could have played in 22 postseason games this year.
Yeah.
You in the history of baseball with those guys before 1969, you could have only played seven.
Yeah, yeah. Strat-O-Matic simulator. Yeah.
And the Yankees were so good, they didn't usually play seven, as you know.
Yeah, bring it on. Strat-O-Matic simulator. As far as
I
the
love
four,
that.
Four, thank you. It just came to me while you were talking. As far as the four home runs in a game, I always think of my tribe, hard hitting Mark Whitten. I think that was back around 93 or so. He was one of the guys that did it. As far as Nick Kurtz doing it, this is one of these things where, again, this should be no surprise. I mean, you talk about the bluest of blue chip guys. Like, this is a guy where, I mean, if he goes on to have, you know, the career, and this is a mouthful. If we talk about the first half of the career of Mike Trout, I mean, that's where Nick Kurtz could conceivably be. I mean, as particularly, again, he's only going to be in that ballpark in a few years. They're going to be moving on to the Sydney Opera House, new Las Vegas ballpark in a couple of years. So we'll get to see what he looks like there.
And you probably know that Nick Kurtz hit the longest home run in the major leagues this year, 493 feet. And Mike Trout, who, you know, at least came back a little bit this year, hit one for 485 feet. Those are the two longest of the year. And maybe that's just bigger, faster, stronger. I don't know. But the home run weirdness struck me at such a power level that we've never heard of before, other than the steroids days with individuals.
Well, the other thing is, too, as you were talking, I pulled up a spreadsheet here. So giving an early preview of Fantasy Baseball Draftology 2026, which will be available on the main page at fantasydrafthelp.com. One of the things that we do is we study the statistical trends from every season and kind of compare them to past seasons. So I'm going to give you this because what I'm going to tell you is this might sound counterintuitive. The home run tally this year, not up much. The distribution of it is weird, and it's what you're taking note of. This year, home runs per game, 2.33. If we go to 2024, it's 2.24 per game. 2023 was 2.41 home runs per game. So there was more home runs per game in 2023 than in this year. Now you go back to 2022, 2.15, 2021, 2.45, 2020, 2.57. There was less of them then. 2019, this jumps out at me, 2.79. So I don't remember us talking much about home runs at the time, but 2019 was a banner year for them. So it's one of these things where it's how they happened this year that we're taking note of. It's right, a very noteworthy name. So it's like I had a feeling that was going to blow your mind because you're probably thinking, oh, it's probably way above what it was the last couple of years. And I might have thought the same thing before I ran the numbers. But, yeah, so that's a point worth making there is that, like, we're looking at how they happened rather than what the numbers of them were. And we'll see in 2026 if they happen in as noteworthy a way. Just like we had a very noteworthy World Series here and a couple of guys, hoping to, I think, avoid the fate of some of their statistical or whatever you want to call it predecessors here. I think Ernie Clement is hoping to not become the Brian Doyle of the 2025 World Series. I think Treya Savage is certainly hoping not to become, talking about my tribe, the Jared Wright of this World Series. But as I think he would much rather go down as the Josh Beckett of this World Series. One of these guys who, again, really started to, you know, show what the rest of his career was going to look like. And I think that is fairly likely when you look at Yu Savage or the way that he came about. But again,
where do you put Miguel Rojas in that?
Yeah. 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 As far as, you know, great role players who made it. I mean, if I was to, look, two names that we loathe on the North Coast to this day, you could say Edgar Renteria or Craig Counsell. We spit at those names to this very day in C-Town. But, yeah, could be in there. But, again, I owe an apology to Toronto for saying it was going to be a sweep because the Dodgers – again, the way they looked indomitable coming out of the National League. And so, again, I sort of overcorrected on this. As a guy who picked Milwaukee to win the National League Championship Series against the Dodgers, that was my forecast matchup going into the playoffs. I thought Milwaukee was going to be able to do it. I wasn't laying, you know, too much on the 6-0 regular season record, but it counted for something. It had to count for something. And again, Milwaukee, just such a very professional team at the plate. They had the arms. If anybody could take down the Dodgers, I thought it could be them. When they blew through them, when they blew through the Phillies, before that, I was just like, okay, yeah, there's no stopping them. And Toronto came out of, and I've been calling the American League for the last 2 years the loser's bracket because it doesn't have the depth of teams that the National League does. It just freaking doesn't.
You're 100% right, but I would say, frankly, I picked the Dodgers before the year, but that's you're picking the even money.
I did too, and I veered from that.
I picked them before the playoffs. I picked them before the World Series only because they were playing so well at the end of the year into the playoffs.
Sure.
But I still think the Dodgers were incredibly lucky. I think we're probably going to focus on games 3 and 7, but game 6, when that ball got stuck in the wall,
yeah,
that changed maybe the whole series. You know, I mean, it was so weird, but I think the Dodgers were very lucky. And I'll just give you Clayton Kershaw, who was never good in the playoffs. I'm sorry. Right. He's never, but they brought him in. I was texting Joe Stasek. I hope they don't bring Kershaw in if they want to win the game. And he came in and pitched to one guy in the whole play. Well, one guy in the World Series.
Yeah.
And that was Nathan Lukes. And it was bases loaded. It was the 12th inning of the 18th inning game. And it was an 8-pitch at bat and a full count, of course, a couple of foul balls. And on the 8th pitch, Kershaw threw a breaking ball where the catcher had his mitt down, had his glove down, almost touching the dirt in the opposite in the righty's batter's box. But that's when Lucas hit that little ground ball to second, and Edmund made a really nice play on the underhand. And you saw, I think you saw Luke, you definitely saw Lucas throw his helmet on the ground. I don't think it was because he didn't beat that out. I think it was because he knew the 3-2 pitch was this far outside.
Right.
I understand, you know, the big pressure of the game. But if he took that pitch, then for all we know, Clayton Kershaw would have been the biggest bum of the world because they would have gone up now. They would have gone up one run. But I don't know. I just found that game 3 game fascinating.
It was. And again, I wasn't able, like much of the country, I wasn't able to stay up to see what ended up happening here. I found out about it the next morning. There were any number of things along the way as far as the little things you know, that happened and all of the different variables that came into play. And I will say this, and that this is not a take that I've heard anywhere. This may be a little bit controversial, but Alejandro Kirk getting I'm going to have to put this in air quotes, hit by pitch there. Like, to me, at the end of the game, you hear this more so in basketball and in football, the phrase ball don't lie. That guy hit the end of the game ending double play, ball don't lie. Because he got away with one on that one. The whole, like, he did not try to get out of the way, Steve. Not at all.
I was wondering, though, the guy at first, I looked him up, he had no stolen bases. You know, the only way they could probably lose right then and there was a ground ball, kind of, it could have been a ground ball to short or second or third. Mm-hmm. But Kirk, of course, is an excellent player who just can't run. You know, if you're talking about his tools, he's got a lot of tools, but running is not one of them.
Traditional catcher.
Yeah, so I think and look, I love Mookie Betts. I've never seen a superstar player be so, you know, by his own admission, he goes, I got no answers. Now, he did get that one single for the two runs in that one game, which was big. Other than that, he looked like a Triple-A player. And it was great that he made the final play, but, you know, they're making it out to be like the greatest play in the history of the world. It was a slow bouncer up to – he had all day because he had a guy who couldn't run going first. He just had to beat the guy to second. And, you know, again, I think that was a little lucky. Kirk could have done 100 other things, like hit a fly ball.
Right. But that was but then it wouldn't have been the cosmic repayment for making first base on a hit by pitch that he didn't even try to get out of. So, you know,
you're right. That's a very good point. I did want to mention Will Klein because, well, you know, this was 18 innings, 19 pitchers, 10 for the Dodgers, Blue Jays 9. That's a record, not surprisingly. But Will Klein, who had not pitched more than 2 innings all year and didn't particularly seem like a guy who could go distance through 4 shutout innings to get the win.
Right.
He was the key. I mean, again, there were tons of, you know, the Dodger bullpen, you know, they came to play on that one. The Dodger bullpen in game 7 was essentially their starters. Their starters came into pitch. But in game 3, you know, they did a hell of a job. Of course, we have to mention Ohtani. You want a record that'll never be broken? 9 at bats, 2 homers, 2 doubles, and 5 walks, 4 intentional. The 5th one was an unintentional, you know.
Right.
He threw 4 pitches.
Right.
Like the old days when you had to throw 4 pitches, you know. But Ohtani's still unbelievable. I will rank him at the end of his career still, I think, number 2 to Babe Ruth. We can have that conversation another time. But what he did, you know, 3 home runs in that one game, pitching. You know, plays 18 innings, pitching the next day. You can't be surprised he wasn't great pitching the next day, Frank.
True. He was up and down offensively during the series, though. I mean, he was. He had a lot of moments that were kind of tough. And, again, the intentional walks to him, you would think that a team with the – and, again, payroll isn't everything because there are teams that don't live up to their payroll, but the Dodgers the last couple of years have lived up to their payroll. So a team like the Dodgers, you would not think you'd be able to intentionally walk Ohtani that many times. But like you said, you got Betts that was not exactly himself during it. Freeman was kind of up and down. The big guns were there at various points in time and allowing Toronto to really come in and, again, be able to overachieve, to be able to hang with them, take it as far as they took it. And yet again, losing game 6 and 7 at home, the game 6, you know, ball in the wall at the very end there is something that we'll remember for a long time to come because it is just so fluky. And that's the thing where, you know.
Rick, I just wonder if they're going to fix it so next year it'll be down to the ground. It'll be a little late, but they might just fix that next year.
Yeah, I mean, I wonder how badly the groundskeeper got tortured after that game for leaving that gap in the wall because, you know, you could say that cost them the World Series. I mean, if it had bounced out of there, if it would have bounced out of there, it still wouldn't have been time to nail the runner at home plate. So, yeah, I mean, there was that. And then, again, as far as how close it came at home plate, Will Smith with the tag, if you want to call it that, of home plate on the force out there. That was one of those things.
Rick, do you think they would ever, I don't know where the talking was going on, but do you think there was a conversation, was can we really end the World Series on an overturned call at the plate? Which certainly, look, this is like in football. If they had called them safe, I think they would have held that. They called them out and they held that. But I was very – there's just two guys I want to talk about.
I want to answer that question just real quickly. Yeah. No, I was texting somebody at the moment and said, I'm not 100% sure Will Clark had his foot down when he caught the ball, but they're not overturning, you know, the call and ending the World Series that way.
I think you're right. And that might have been what happened. That might, we'll never know what the conversation was, but you're right. But the two guys I wanted to mention briefly, because the first guy, of course, is the center fielder. His name is spelled Pages, but it's pronounced Pajes, Andy Pajes.
Yes.
And
what a catch.
Give Dave Roberts credit. I think it's the greatest catch in the history of baseball. Why? Because if he catches it, they can win the World Series. If he doesn't, they lose the World Series right then and there.
Yeah. And Kiki Hernandez got right in the way, you know.
And I read an article that Kiki Hernandez, after the catch was made, he was face down on the ground, but he thought that they had lost the World Series. Not like he got hurt or anything. He thought, how is this guy gonna? And that was an unbelievable catch. You know,
it was. Yeah.
You can talk about Mays in 54 like this, incredible. I talk about Ron Swoboda in the 1969 World Series. Ron Swoboda, the right fielder, left his feet for a diving catch that held them to one, held the Orioles to one run. But I think this, because of when it is, I saw Willie Mays make a very similar catch in a regular season game, which I always thought was the best catch ever. It was identical to what Pajes did in left center, except Willie Mays did it in right center, and he had to knock over Bobby Bonds. Bobby Bonds to make the catch. I think this is the same catch as that, but in a much, much more, you'll never find a more important place to make a catch. And for that, I think he gets the greatest catch ever in the history of baseball. Maybe someone will come up with another one. And the other guy, of course, is Yoshinobu Yamamoto.
Yes.
I mean, what did he do? Game two complete game after throwing a prior complete game. That never happens anymore. You know, we laughed at that in the 60s and 70s. Of course, everybody threw complete games back then. For whatever reason, not now. And then come back in game six and pitch very well, six innings. And then to come in game seven and everybody's saying, what are they saying? Oh, Randy Johnson, 2001. 100% right. Most people left out Grover Cleveland Alexander, who in the 1926 World Series against the Yankees pitched a complete game, 10-2 win in game six, came in game seven, struck out Tony Lazzari with the bases loaded. And I looked at AI and I wonder if AI really gets it in baseball, because the AI said, and then he got the next five guys out to win the World Series, including Babe Ruth. Well, Babe Ruth got thrown out stealing to end the 1926 World Series.
Right.
So the Grover Cleveland Alexander to get him out. I think they walked him intentionally, by the way. I'm not 100% but whatever. That's really all I have to say about all of this. But I think it might be the greatest World Series ever. We can come up with a couple of others maybe. But the Yankees lost in 2001. I thought that was one of the greatest World Series I had ever seen because of what they did to get back in the game. And then Randy Johnson did to them what Yamamoto did last week.
Well, and at the time, Randy Johnson, you knew going in, everybody in the world knew going in, he was a top five pitcher in the world. I don't know that necessarily people would have known that about Yamamoto. They might have said top 10. I don't think there's any question right now he's top five in the world after what we saw there. You know, you've got your big three or four or whatever of, you know, like Deans and Scooble and Crochet, but, you know, he's right behind, you know, those guys. I mean, he's right in there. And so, yeah, you talk about that. And again, as far as the great catches in the history of baseball, you're right to cite all of those. My dear sweet mom would blanch at hearing the Willie Mays catch being referenced here. But, you know, nonetheless, it needs to be mentioned in that breath. And yeah, so an unbelievable World Series with so many twists and turns here. And again, the home run, the tying home run, you know, that sent it into extra innings to where, you know, Will Smith could hit the game winner, you know. So you had a couple ones there that were evocative of World Series home runs, you know, from days gone by. So just a truly, truly remarkable World Series, the likes of which I did not see coming, obviously, because of everything that I had said coming in and about the Dodgers' place in the universe and where I thought they were going to be. So they'll be going for the three-peat next year. It'll be the first time anybody's been able to go for that since the, 2000 Yankees, which was, again, the last team to do a repeat in Major League Baseball. The first National League repeater, for what it's worth, since the 1975-76 Cincinnati Reds, the Big Red Machine. So this Dodgers team, with the third one since 2020, already on a list of baseball's all-time dynasties. We'll see how they continue to fill that in 2026 and beyond. And we'll be tracing all of that with you, Steve Callis. Thank you so much for being here. And again, for doing great baseball segments with me here in 2025 that truly honored the spirit of the late, great Ken Detweiler.
My pleasure, Rick. And of course, we're thinking about Ken Detweiler today, but it's always a pleasure to do this stuff with you. And I look forward to more.
Thanks, Steve. Really appreciate it, buddy. And thank you, everybody, for tuning in to FDH Lounge Mini Episode 1882.